Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Yes, we are still on the topic of history, and last week we had a wonderful discussion, or listened to a wonderful sharing, I should say, of three women who went on a trip to Japan with me they all had their own motivation, but my motivation for going on the trip and for organizing it was to see if being in Japan, getting to know a little bit, just a touch, of the culture of Japan would make a difference in how they related to the history. And this tour was really successful, and I'm really happy about that because it gives me reassurance that there's a part of my direction that I'm going in these days that is really has merit. And of course, that's always nice to have some reassurance of that. My tact is these days that there's the research that has really been interesting because for the most part, the information part that has come out of these research times has been very supportive of the story as I learned it from my grandmother. And the thing that remains very difficult for me to communicate about to people is the actual context which I hold the story. And I wondered if going to Japan and being in Japan, sleeping on futon on the floor, and being able to experience the Japanese culture for 7 days would make a difference. And obviously for the three people and also the other people who went on the tour, this answer is yes. So that was really wonderful for me. It puts me in a place, though, of course, of not wanting to be indispensable. Anybody can go on a trip to Japan, and you know, if you would like to have assistance in planning your trip or knowing kind of the basic outline of a trip that I would take, I can certainly help you. You would have to do your own reservations and so on, which is quite an intensive process. And if you can get a good Japanese travel agency to do it for you, that's also very helpful because many of the things that we saw you have to apply for, and you have to apply for them many, many months in advance to gain admission. So when we speak about the history, we're not just speaking about the history, we're also demonstrating the power of the oral tradition and also the richness of the oral tradition. And some of that richness is in the actual mystery or the places where the history seems to bridge into an unknown place, like what happens if we can't find Mikao Usui at Doshisha University? Does that mean he wasn't there? Well, I'm not a linear thinker, and for me, that's not necessarily true. That he wasn't there. Maybe we just can't find him, or I don't know, maybe there's some mysterious reason why this information is not readily available. Who knows? It doesn't bother me, you know, in the sense where I feel like I have to have all the rational information at hand at this moment. And what Paul was saying 2 weeks ago was that what's the priority? What's the value of the story? The value is the energetic, which it carries and which it also communicates to the student many things. It communicates the particular history of each individual in the lineage, not their personal history, but their history in relationship to this practice. And also what it does is it allows us as students to know where we are coming from. Now, some people would say that it's important for the story to be accurate. Well, that's true in some way. And I believe its accuracy. what's interesting for me is that when I look at the creation stories of Indian nations, and I've read, I think, maybe 25 or 30 of them here in the United States, each one of them is different in the sense of the information and the characters of the story, but the essence is the same. And what ties these creation stories together is that it allows the members of that particular tribe to come to an understanding not only of where they've come from, but the very basic principles that bind them together. So one of the things that, for instance, in the story that is very important to me is this process of Mikau Usui, who was living his life as a regular person, was teaching in this school. Someone asked him a question, and all of a sudden, that question lit him up. In other words, it produced a reaction in him that was far beyond just a question from a student to a teacher. It went inside of him and propelled him into a search that took the rest of his life. And, you know, in my own mind, I often ask myself, well, would he have thought that he had been successful in his search? Would he have thought that he actually was successful in finding out how did Jesus heal? I wonder about that. I mean, I'm a little bit of a curious person, and I think, well, we can assume that he would say yes. But what if he said no? What if he decided that though Reiki was really beautiful and it provided answers to a lot of questions, is this really the way that Jesus healed, or is there something more? And this, for me, is the part that is always intriguing. We'll never know, of course. The other thing that really is wonderful for me about the history is that as a Reiki student, it has provided me, since I heard the story, even though I had a hard time believing it from my grandmother because it seemed so, excuse me, preposterous, that I have never had a question about where I've come from. I know my parents, and I know the stories about my parents. I don't know their detail, but that's okay. And that's really true in my life. Like, I know who my parents, my blood parents are. I have met my grandmothers. My grandfathers had died when my mother and father actually were quite young, so I never met them. And I have heard stories about my maternal great-grandmother, but I don't go back any further. Like, I don't have this long family lineage. So for me, the lineage of Reiki has really been there all the time for me, and I really trust that Mikau Usui existed, Shijiro Hayashi existed, Hawaio Takata existed, I know for sure, and my practice exists, that this is something that will live in me. Even if somebody had the possibility to disprove the whole story, it wouldn't matter to me because I have what I have in my hands. I have my experiences that I've gained from this practice, and that for me is really important. And one of the most profound experiences for me in this practice is the telling of the story and the amazing result, not only the place where it takes me, but the place that it takes my students. Now, my ultimate question is why? And of course, I've learned when I did the S training that why is not a good question to ask, because it just leads us into our logical mind. And why, they say, is the booby prize of life. So we're going to go to another question, which is what place does it have in our practice? And for me, the place it has is to create not just the creation story of Reiki, but also to create to create stories that exemplify the very nature of Reiki in people's lives. Like Mikao Usui heard this question from his students, it propelled him into a search, it changed his life, and in that it changed the lives of millions of people on the planet today. That's amazing. My grandmother went to Japan seeking her health because she was a widow and she had two daughters that she needed to care for. And in that search, she found Reiki. And once she had a number of Reiki treatments, she was committed to the practice. And she found a way to become a student and became a dedicated, passionate student of the system and of this life energy called Reiki. That changed her life, and that change in her life touched everyone she met, and she met a lot of people. So, you know, sometimes I ask myself, does it matter really about the data? Does it matter about the information? The interesting thing that has been fascinating for me to watch is that as I've told the story of my grandmother, for instance, I've noticed that the places where I revert back to information don't carry energy. And the places where I tell her story that has specifically to do with Reiki and her path in Reiki, that has energy. So during the last 30 years, I pared her story down from it being almost an hour in and of itself to being like 20 minutes. Not because I needed to save time, although that was a good benefit, but I realized that at the time when I was telling all this personal information about my grandmother and our relationship and he said, she said, and so on, that I lost the thread of this energy that was pouring out of me when I was speaking the story of Mikao Usui and Shijiro Hayashi. So why is that? And what is it that changes information into an energetic exchange? It isn't just that it becomes a legend, so to speak, or that it's questionable in its content. There's something much more that is going on, and I find this to be a very interesting process. When Donna and Joyce and Colleen talk about their experience that they had in Japan, we didn't necessarily talk directly about Reiki, but when they came back and began to tell the story again in their classes, what happened for them is they realized that something on a cellular level had changed, that they had been immersed into the culture of Japan, into an understanding that allowed them to connect more, like instead of having this second-hand connection, they had a first-hand connection. And it wasn't that they met Mikao Usui or Shijiro Hayashi or Hawaii Otakata there, but somehow they connected to the energy and became congruent with that energy. I find that to be fascinating. So, you know, the big question is, well, why does that make a difference? Well, I don't know. That's part of our mystery that we live with. The other interesting thing for me about the history is that, as I tell it, over all these years, this quality of dropping into another part of myself, the part of me I identify as Reiki Master, becomes stronger and stronger, and there's less difference between that person and the person of what I would call my private Phyllis. So but at the same time, I'm not willing to just tell the story to anybody. So when I'm on an airplane and somebody asks me what I do and I say Reiki, and then they want to know more, I just say, well, you know, this is not a place that I'm willing to talk about Reiki. If you want to talk about Reiki, we'll have to do it somewhere else. Right now, I'm, you know, traveling, and I need to just have some space to myself. And it's a way for me to know when is it appropriate to call forth that energy. And when is it appropriate to tap into that energy that we have? So, you know, it's very interesting for me that some masters and also some students can just tap into that energy and they feel comfortable in airplanes or wherever. And for me, I'm very selective about where this place in me comes out, and I think that's very individual. But the history for me is one of the things that really is a telling place. Like, if I feel like I can tell the history, then there is an opening there that is like a message to me. And I don't know if you all can really understand this, but it's like a feedback tool. If I'm able to tell the story, then there's some opening in the energy that feels different than somebody just asking out of curiosity. One of the most difficult questions, of course, in the history is my own history, and what do people say about me, and what do I want them to say about me? Well, I've never really fully answered this question, and perhaps this is something that I can grapple with over the next months. I'm in the process of putting together a student book, which I am very excited about, and I hope that I can get this published next year. This book will be for any Reiki master who wants to present it to their students. It's a book that will provide a possibility to extend the oral tradition, I hope, to through the written word in a certain way, and provide also the understanding that this practice is not something that's a technique where the history is something that is full of information, that there is a trackable situation, and that there is an understanding that it doesn't really matter who your teacher is, as long as their credentials are connected. And I think that the difference between a technique and a practice, such as the one that we're involved in Reiki, is the difference in these very fundamental processes. For me, what my job is as a master is not to be an expert, but to be able to share my practice clearly, simply, as a beginner, so that every beginning student is able to have a beginning class, and they then will feel empowered to create their own relationship with Reiki the energy, and to have their relationship with the practice, whatever that practice is, whether it's my practice or another practice. And then as masters, what we do is we continue on our own path as students, forging the way, so to speak, being scouts, you know, so that other people can follow us. And it's more from example or from energetic example than it is by being an expert, by having the answers to all the questions. For sure, I don't have the answers to a lot of the questions, because they're still in the realm of mystery, and I may never know the answers. And that is not important to me. That's not a priority to me. One of the things that I love about this practice is that there's this vast amount of unknown. And the more that I know, or the more that I discover in this practice, the more that I know I don't know. And that seems very trite, but it is really a true statement for me. And that also applies to the history, and it's one of the most fascinating things. You would think that the history would be something finite, something stable, something stationary. I had this wonderful history professor when I was a freshman in college, way, way, way back when. And he was from Czechoslovakia. He was an attorney, actually, in Czechoslovakia, and came to the United States after World War II, and, of course, ended up teaching history to some spoiled college students in Missouri. And, you know, he just turned me on to history. You know, he was not concerned with dates or with events. He said, you know, if you are cognizant of the importance of a certain event, you will remember the date. But until you understand the importance of that in the context of what happened, you know, in this timeline continuum, then, you know, you're just learning it by rote, and then you might as well not even know it, because it's not necessary to know. So he presented history as a moving kaleidoscope of human endeavor that sparked imagination, creativity, violence, inhumane treatment to each other, war, and despair. And all of that is a part of our human condition. So for me, the history of Reiki is something that allows us to participate in being human, in to participate in the disappointments, in the trials and tribulations of our lineage bearers and of the people who brought Reiki to us. You know, lots of people think that Reiki was rediscovered or reinvented or something by Mikao Usui. And for me, what happened was that he has a unique place in the healing history of mankind right now. He took a question and, through his search, found answers for himself, not a written how-to-do-it book, a formula of Reiki practice, but certainly guideposts and impulses that guided him to each step of the way that he took. And as he took these steps, it allows us to see that we are doing the same thing. For each of us, whether we know it or not, somewhere in our life we have a burning question. We have something that sparks us, that drives us to do something. And that question will burn in us for the rest of our lives. That question probably brought us to Reiki. And we will experiment with it, unquote. We will use it. We will make mistakes. We will find that it gives others joy. And we will get satisfaction from that. We will experience its healing on all different kinds of levels. And still, there is something that drives us for the next step, something that we know there's something around the next corner, and that's what Mikao Usui gives us, is this journey that he has done, and it allows us to follow the same path that he did, but in our own way. very inspiring story from a man who was simply a man following his burning question. And my approach right now is that the more I can learn about the context in which they lived, Mikao Usui, Shishiro Hayashi, and Hawaii Otakata, the more able I am to understand their courage, their willingness to be on the cutting edge of their own cultural and societal norms, the more admiration I can have for their willingness to follow their passion and to do something that was just extraordinary. And when I think about this, I think about all of you out there, and I think about myself, and I know that we are on a journey that allows us to live extraordinary lives in a very ordinary way. Things become just how they are. And our lives become a way of living our passion. And this, for me, is a kind of success that cannot be measured. The history of this practice tells it all. And there are many, many versions, because each storyteller often adds something of their understanding, and often adds something of their assumption, and often adds something of their own insecurity about telling a story that they cannot relate to. So the best place to start to unravel this is to go back to context, to find out about the history of Japan and the history of the Japanese workers in Hawaii, and to understand the environment in which these people lived, because it's very different than where we are today. And this is something that I'm trying to do for myself. Well, the next thing I'd like to do right now is to simply tell the story of Mikao Usui as I know it and as I heard it from Hawaii Otakata. And this story is the story that I tell my students in first degree. About 100 years ago in Japan, there lived a man by the name of Mikao Usui. He taught in a Christian boys' school, Doshisha University. And one day, in his class, his students asked, "Do you believe in the stories of Jesus?" And Mikao Usui said, "Yes, I do." And his students said, "Well, it's enough for you to believe just on faith, but it's not enough for us. So prove it to us." Somehow this challenge burned in Mikao Usui, and eventually he quit the school and went on a search. He was very interested in the healing stories of Jesus, and his question was, how did Jesus heal? It was said that he traveled in many countries seeking the answer. Finally, he came to the United States, to Chicago, and studied religions in a university. And as he studied religions, he realized that most all of the religious leaders had healed by laying on of hands. And he never found out how. So he decided that he would go back to his home country, Japan, and study the Buddhist scriptures called sutras. He went to a monastery, and there he found a place where he could study and meditate and be with himself his inner self. He read the sutras first in Japanese and then learned Sanskrit, the original language that the sutras were written in. And as he studied and read, he became close friends with the man who ran the monastery called the abbot. One day, as he was studying, he found a passage that excited him. He found what he was looking for. And he took this passage and read it over and over again, going deeply into it, preparing himself. And when he felt like he was ready, he went to the abbot and said, "I am ready to go on a 21-day fast. I'm going to go up Kuramayama and sit. And if I don't come back after 21 days, please send somebody to get my body." And so with that, Mikao Usui left and went to Kuramayama. He found his place on the mountain, gathering 21 stones to keep track of the days. And pretty soon, there was one stone left. And he thought to himself, if something's going to happen, it's got to be soon, because tomorrow I have to leave. And in the night sky, just before the dawn, he saw a very bright light come toward him. And he, at first, moved a little bit, thinking, maybe this will hurt me. And then his next thought was, maybe this is what I've been waiting for. So he sat up and looked at the light, and the light struck him in the middle of the forehead, and he fell into a trance. In this trance, he saw these rainbow bubbles with golden symbols in them, and they came through his vision from left to right. And when he saw each of the symbols, he knew inside what they were for. After some time, he awoke from his trance and realized that the sun was very high in the sky. So he jumped up, brushed himself off, and knew that he must hurry to get to the monastery in time so that they didn't send somebody out for him. And he was very, very excited about what had happened. So as he went down the mountain, he walked faster and faster and tripped over something. And he hurt his toe. And immediately he grabbed his toe with his hand and treated it. The pain went away, the bleeding stopped, and he thought, first miracle. So he went down his way, and when he got down toward the bottom of the mountain, he saw a little hut in the forest. But there was a bench and a red cloth over it, which meant that the people inside would feed pilgrims. And as he approached the little hut, an old man came out and said, "Old monk, you've been on the mountain many, many days. I can tell by your beard and your clothing. I know just what you need to eat." And Mikao Usui said, "Oh no, I don't want what you're thinking of. I want to have a true breakfast." And the old man shook his head and said, you're going to be sick. And Mikao Usui insisted upon having a regular meal. So in a few moments, a young woman came out, and it was evident that she had been crying. And when she drew closer, it was also evident that her cheek was swollen. So Mikao Usui asked, "What's the matter? What's happening?" And she told him that she had had a very, very bad toothache for the last few days. Mikao Usui put his hands on her face, and in a few moments, the pain was gone, the swelling was down. And she thanked him profusely, and he thought to himself, "Aha, second miracle." And then he sat and ate his meal, enjoying every moment. He thanked the old man and the young girl and went off down toward the monastery. And as he walked away, he realized he was feeling really wonderful. And so he thought to himself, third miracle, I'm not sick. So he went down the mountain, and got to the monastery, and went immediately to the abbot. And he shared everything that had happened. And the abbot said, "You have been given a gift. In the old days, we treated both the physical and the spiritual body. Now, there are doctors to treat the physical body, and we treat the spiritual. But what you have been given is something that puts these two together, makes people a complete whole." And with that, Dr. Usui went to his bed. And for the next few days, he stayed at the monastery, recovering from his fasting, telling and having conversations with the abbot. And eventually, he decided that he would go out and apply what he had learned, what he had been given. So he decided to go to a part of the city where very poor people lived, and they were often very sick. And he went to the head of this beggar camp and asked the man if he could live in the beggar camp, if they would provide him a space, and he would put his hands on people and heal them as an exchange. So the beggar camp chief said yes. And Mikao Usui set up his little place in the beggar camp and began to treat people. And as he treated people, they became physically more able to work and eventually became well. And he would, through his contacts of his former life, be able to find jobs for them. So they would go out and start working, and he thought, "Well, this is a wonderful way that I can clear this beggar camp and make these people substantial citizens." Well, sometime later, Mikao Usui started to see familiar faces. And finally, he got up enough courage one day to ask one of them, "Don't I know you?" "Oh, yes, monk. You know me. I came to you and you healed me, and then you sent me out to do a job. And, well, I went to this work every day for many weeks. But I didn't like being told what to do. So I decided I wanted to be my own boss. So I came back. And here I can be my own boss. Nobody tells me what to do." And over the next weeks, Mikao Usui heard the story in its different variations over and over. And eventually he realized that he had not heeded the abbot's advice, that somehow he did not give these people all that he could give them that would make them a complete whole. So he quit the beggar camp. And the next time we see and hear of Dr. Usui, he's out in the street with a lighted torch in his hand. And people come up to him and say, "Old monk, are you crazy? It's daylight outside. You don't need a torch." And Mikao Usui would say, "All I see is darkness around me. And if you want to know about this light, come to where I am tonight." And he would give them a time and a place. And this was the way he gathered his students. One of these students was a man by the name of Shujiro Hayashi. I'm going to stop there. What a beautiful story. When I tell the story, I can just feel, imagine the energy coming through. I can imagine like watching a movie in front of my eyes, the adventures of Mikao Usui. Now we are all a part of the story. And in some way, in our own way, we're walking the same path. That's the gift that he's given us, for me, is that he walked his path, and that path has become an archetype for all of us. A path of humanity, a path of humility, a path of passion. Was his journey finished? I don't know. But I feel and know the gift that he was able to pass down as he walked his journey. And if each of us is able to touch a few people as he did, then our life is a success. If we are able to keep to our passion, to keep to our humanity, and to keep to humility, then we will have achieved a place that he did also. The word Reiki means universal life energy. Each of us has a practice that connects us to this energy. There's no wrong way to do it, and there's no right way. There's no way to compare different practices. Because whatever your practice is, if it's working for you, then it's yours. And if you get to a place where you feel stuck, then apply more Reiki. If you feel when you get to a place that it isn't rewarding, then apply more Reiki. See what happens. In my life, I know that I can imagine what my life's going to be like in the future. But I would have never imagined 30 years ago that I would be living in Green Valley, Arizona, communicating with you over an internet radio show so passionately about a practice of Reiki. So, our future is unknown, it's a mystery. And it is our moment right now to live as much as we can in our present, to be able to meet our future with open arms, knowing where we've come from, and knowing that there are people who have walked the path before us, left their mark energetically and physically, so that we may follow. This is the value of history for me. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back next week with a new topic. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.